All right. Well, I hurried as quickly as I could from the airport, but we made it. So it was a tight one. This is fun. Jerry, you and I have known each other for a long time. I don't know, 15 years, something like that. Capital, CPLP as it's currently called, has come a long way. So I'm sort of, as an analyst, I'm sort of in the business of storytelling. So I thought I'd use this as an opportunity for you to tell a little bit about the story of the company. And let's start at the beginning. Like, what was the grand idea way back when, as the business was started? You were there then, correct?
Indeed, yep.
And then the evolution to where we are today. So, but we can start at the beginning. That's where all good stories start.
Indeed, and it's almost scary that we were both around at the time. That was in 2007 when we started with CPLP, and you know, hence also the name Capital Product Partners. We started at the time with 8 brand new product tankers and another 7 that were on order. 15 brand new product tankers with long-term charters to the likes of BP, Morgan Stanley at the time, and others. Interestingly enough, apart from the fact that all these vessels had long-term charters, we also had fixed OPEX and swapped interest costs. So it was an MLP wet dream, I guess, at the time. But it was also a very different world. It was a time of non-amortizing debt. So this is pre-Lehman, almost a sin to mention this right now. And we had a good growth story. It was a very successful IPO, as you might recall. You know, I remember the first day that we went public, the stock went up by 30%. I think it's probably the second most successful IPO in terms of price appreciation. And things actually did very well for the first 10 years or so. We raised a lot of equity. We redeployed that equity into acquiring other types of assets. So over time, we diversified into containers as well as dry bulk.
Now, was that always the plan? Or when you guys were starting it, was it just going to be product tankers? And then over time, it changed?
Well, I think as the name implies, probably it wasn't. But in the end, it was the MLP was agnostic about asset types. Up to a large extent, it was more focused on cash flows. So all these assets that came into the MLP, as well as the merger with crude carriers in 2011, that was on the back of assets with long-term charters. But really, this worked until it didn't. I think in 2015, you saw the drop in oil prices and then the implosion of the MLP universe, not just in shipping, but I think in the wider business. We have since then tried to do a number of things, including the divestment of older tankers with the spin-off into Diamond S, which subsequently became International Seaways, all very accretive for shareholders. But I think at some point it was clear that, firstly, the model has its limitations, and secondly, we could also see quite interesting fundamentals on the LNG side of the business.
So, and to that end, you've been selling container ships, and at this point, there's a few of those left to go. All of the tankers are gone. All of the dry bulk vessels are gone. There's more LNG vessels coming. But you're also in the process of changing the corporate model. So not only is it, you know, changing the fleet profile, but in the process of getting rid of the MLP designation and moving it to a C corp. Maybe talk through that dynamic and how you came to the decision to do that.
Yeah, so I think as we move towards a new business model that is focused on the LNG and the wider gas business, and I will come back to that, Now, when you look at our fleet, we have 9 LNG carriers in the water and another 9 that's coming. 6 of the vessels that are still to come in 2026-2027 are LNG carriers that do not have employment as of today. We do believe that 2026-2027 is going to be a very interesting space for LNG business, as this is when the new liquefaction wave is coming online. Most projections expect that LNG trade is expected to grow by 60% by the end of this decade, and most of it is on the back of this new liquefaction capacity that we will see in 26, 27, 28. So having open ships at the time is very important to us, and I think it's really a very good time. But I think at the same time, if you want to be able to be more opportunistic about markets, the MLP model is not the best model to be around. We are converting into a corporation. The idea is that within the next few months, the company will have shares and shareholders as opposed to units and LPs. There will be the abolition of the GP. It will be absorbed by the company, and I think you should expect a plain vanilla corporate governance with typical of corporations.
Now, does that mean, and we'll get to the segments in a second, but CPLP has operated historically as a traditional drop-down MLP, where new assets have been warehoused at the private company, typically, until the cash flows were, you know, had materialized, and then it was sold into the MLP. Does a different model change the way that happens? Do you still view Capital Maritime as the incubator for assets that then move into the public listing, or is it now more of a standalone business?
No, the idea is for CPLP to be more of a standalone business. So there is a non-compete agreement when it comes to LNGs between Capital Maritime and CPLP. CPLP will be the driver of the LNG business. In terms of other types of assets, for example, very large ammonia carriers, liquid CO2 carriers, CPLP secured the right of first refusal on those type of assets on the back of the wider agreement that we reached in December. So you shouldn't be surprised if you see CPLP buying second-hand assets or contracting new builds. But on the other hand, we expect that there are synergies between Capital Maritime, the private side, and CPLP. And if there are good opportunities that we can derive from there, like many other groups have done very successfully in the past, we will, of course, look at Capital Maritime as well. But it's not a captive model, per se, as it has been, which was typical of the MLP, let's say, standard.
Okay. So let's talk about the businesses, mostly LNG at the moment, but you talked about large ammonia carriers, CO2 carriers. What's stepping back, and let's just say by the end of the decade, what would you envision? You still haven't come up with a new name, right? So whatever the name is, unless you just want to mention it here and we can make news. But what is the business going to look like from today? We've gotten to that point where we are today to 5 years from now. How do you think the company looks?
So with regard to the name, I think we will come out with it when we also announce the conversion to the corporation. But in the end, I think the idea is for CPLP to become the tonnage provider of the energy transition shipping requirements. So obviously, when it comes to the energy transition, LNG is going to play a major role. LNG is going to replace coal power generation. And it's going to be adopted and is being adopted in order for developing countries to be able to have cleaner air, but also to address the intermittency of renewables. So LNG is a major stepping stone, if you want, in the energy transition. But in addition to that, there is also the side of blue hydrogen production. LNG obviously is going to be natural gas, and LNG is going to be the way to start the energy transition through the production of blue hydrogen. There you need carbon capture. As you know, Capital Maritime has been one of the pioneers and has ordered 4 liquid CO2 carriers, so there is a lot of know-how that we have been developing there in this business. So we want to be part of that. A liquid CO2 carrier is really a multi-gas carrier that can transport LPG, ammonia, but of course liquid CO2, and that requires a very specific tank configuration as well as cargo systems. So that's one part of the business that we want to be in. The other part is, of course, the transportation of ammonia. Blue hydrogen, in order to be, as well as green hydrogen, in order to be transported, will require ammonia carriers. So very large ammonia carriers, medium gas carriers, handy gas carriers that can carry ammonia, these are also going to become a major part of the energy transition shipping. Right now, it is mostly a business that is focused around fertilizers, but I think this is a business that is expected to grow quite a bit. Of course, then you have the potential production of e-methane. E-methane, in the end, is hydrogen that has been converted with the use of carbon of CO2 into LNG, eLNG, if you want. So again, this means that the LNG carriers come back into the mix, but not just as part of the energy transition, but potentially also in a world of net zero emissions. So being able to provide all those types of transportation, so LNG, ammonia carriage, being part of the carbon capture and storage business, so the transportation of liquid CO2, this is where we want to be and be, if you want, the shipping provider for all energy transition gas requirements.
Now, some of that CO2, for instance, is... it doesn't exist, right, today. There's no market for it, at least not in scale. It's a pretty bold move, I would say, to decide that you guys are going to be the pioneer in a brand new area. Even the large ammonia carriers, right? These are not well established markets. Certainly, how do you think about that risk?
So that is a good point. And, of course, when we talk to emitters and the storage providers alike, there are literally dozens of projects that are either at FID or beyond FID stage. There's a number of things that are going on. There are carbon capture and storage projects that are already live as we speak. So this is a business that is taking off. If you look at forward projections, for example, for the LCO2 business, you can see that the business is expected to amount to 400 MTPA by 2030, but also in terms of maritime volumes, this could be anywhere between 60 to 90 MTPA by the end of the decade. The European Union is expecting around 50 MTPA, for example, just in the European continent alone. And there are many interesting dynamics, both in Europe as well as in the Asia-Pacific region, with regard to the liquid CO2 business. And I think this trade will take off. Same with the ammonia trade. There is a number of blue and green ammonia projects that are currently in the works. But to your point... obviously, all these assets are not one-trick ponies. I mean, a liquid CO2 carrier is a multi-gas carrier that can be in the LPG and ammonia business. So even if a project is delayed by a year, then you can still be in the LPG business until you start in the liquid CO2 business. But again, these are very interesting projects. For example, we have been engaging with a large European emitter, and we have been discussing a 10 to 15 year charter for a liquid CO2 carrier, which will be doing cross, let's say, Europe, cross-continent voyages to pick up a liquid CO2 and transport it to a place of storage. And there are many, many others that are ongoing. So I think it's a bet that is hedged, because these are vessels that can do existing trades. But in the long run, you are very well placed to be the leader in the energy transition business.
Great. I see that we're out of time, but do we take questions here, or can... Or we just keep going, or we stop. I don't know. You're in charge, not me. Okay. Well,
maybe final one, just to... Yeah.
Final one.
Because I can see Nicholas is not very happy with us.
Yeah, I know. very interesting. What was the impetus? What was the motivation behind all of this? LNG has sort of get to a well-established industry, has long-term contracts generally. How did all of this come about?
I think it's building on increasingly on that expertise. The one thing brings the other. So we went to the LNG business. We started looking at the liquid CO2, and then we started engaging with people from both sides of the aisle, for example, emitters and storage providers. Then many of these guys, don't forget, are the same guys, right? I mean, on the LNG side, you will talk to energy companies and utilities, and they are interested in the transportation of ammonia. They are interested in liquid CO2 projects. You talk to utilities in Asia-Pacific, and they have e-methane projects. They want to co-fire power stations between coal and ammonia. But at the same time, they're looking also to do carbon capture or become hubs for carbon capture. So it's the same set of people, really. We would sit to discuss LNG, and then the discussion will go into other segments. So I think being able to provide one-stop shop for all these energy transition needs, this is how it came about. And then, obviously Capital Maritime ordering ships as opposed to not just thinking about it, that has helped a lot, because that gives a reference point to the industry, and then people gravitate towards you. So we have now a lot of visibility into this business beyond LNG. We have, it's more or less the same customers, and so we believe that we can, if you want, take this space also in the public markets and become the energy transition shipping company.
Interesting. All right, well, now we're officially over time, I guess, right?
Yes.
Are there any really pressing questions from the audience? I could keep going, but we only have one, so make it good. All right. Well, none. Then I'll ask. There is the man behind the curtain in all of this, right, Mr. Marinakis? And as part of this transition, as part of the LNG purchase, he dramatically increased his position. I guess my question is, where does he want this to be longer term? What is even his motivation for keeping it a public company to some extent? But where does he, in the best of your opinion, where do you think he envisions the business, the public company, being?
Yeah, so I think the 500 million rights offering was structured in that way, and was fully backstopped by Capital Maritime and, of course, the family. Firstly, in order to make sure that it's an equitable offering, so anybody that wanted to participate together with Capital Maritime could do that. But at the same time, it was also a very clear, if you want, vote that we want this business to be on the LNG side and potentially the energy transition side. We want this business to be a large business. So, you know, if you fast forward, and I'm sure you look at your numbers, you can very easily see that this business in 3 or 4 years can be $500, $600 million EBITDA business, and mostly on the back of contracted cash flows. And I think it was the idea of creating something new and sizable in the public markets that will have this green side to it, because we do think that this is missing from the capital markets right now.
Okay, great. All right, Jerry. Well, I really appreciate it. Hopefully that was okay. Good. Thank you. And thank you very much.